Bishop Canapien against Quaker Oats. Mr. Krisloff.
Morning, Judge Easterbrook, Judge Kenny, and Judge Evans. The issue before the court is who bears the risk of error when an employer takes it upon itself to solicit employees with a promise of an early retirement package and then materially misstates it, both verbally and as supported in writings provided to employees. There are a host of ways in which the wrong perpetrated here can and should be corrected for these two women.
Compensations have been as you claimed it, they should be, what's the difference between what they got and what it would have been?
We calculate it roughly at about $100,000 for each woman. Both women started working for Golden Grain, which I discovered that the San Francisco treat is appropriately made in Bridgeview, Illinois. Both women began working, one in 1977 and one in 1980, for Golden Grain. In 1986, Quaker acquired Golden Grain. And in 2001, PepsiCo acquired Quaker. And in March of 2003, conducted a plant-wide meeting by Tom Winters, who solicited those who would be interested in taking an early retirement package to volunteer to retire early. If any were interested, they should contact Jeff Satterley, who was the HR person. Both Ms. Canapin and Ms. Rojan did contact Jeff Satterley and were unequivocally told by him that all three of the benefits of this special package, severance supplement, change in control, and pension would all date from their original hire by Golden Grain.
Now, obviously, that was an error as to a one plan.
Well, according
but
to what
my question is this: was the dollar amount that was stated what the pension would be accurate, even though the years were not accurate?
In the documents that you're referring to, it may have been close. They were not exact. Understood.
If I'm going to retire and I'm told I'm going to get $2,000 a month as my benefit, and I might think that's based on 30 years of service, and it turns out I'm getting $2,000 a month, but they've only based it on 20 years. It's hard to see that, and if it was an innocent mistake, that was a factor in my deciding to take that early retirement package. If I was told accurately what the dollar amount would be, I think that's what people are more interested in generally, isn't it?
Well, they were told at the time that calculation had to be redone because it was in error anyway. And so that was the one thing that was not certain in what they were presented was that what was the accurate amount of the pension. Jeff Satterley made that clear as well, that he couldn't calculate the amount, and those documents that they had been sent separately were in error. Everybody knew that. It's just that because for years they had always received these documents showing that their credited service would go back to their original hire. They were not told what the pension amount was at Mr. Satterley's meeting. He tried to calculate it, and he calculated figures which had it been calculated based on their actual years of service, would have been much higher. So they were provided with information which would have supported their belief that they were going to get the higher amount, not the amount that had been in those previous documents.
But their decision to elect to take an early retirement benefit here, it's based on a whole bunch of factors. I think people decide, where's the company going to be in a couple of years? Will the job still be here? Maybe it's best to take what I can at this point. But if you're told what the dollar number is, it seems it's less important on how that was calculated?
Not as long as if the dollar figure was presented to you as this is the dollar figure you're going to receive, then perhaps I would agree with you. Here, that was not. It was always understood that that dollar figure that was in those sheets was wrong. Everybody understood that those dollar figures were wrong. What was right, or what was represented as right, was the years of credited service, which would have resulted in the higher figure, which indeed Mr. Satterley penciled out with each of them his best estimation. Now, the fact is, even Ms. Cabot, all the people on the... This is one of those unique cases where if you... And I suggest that you can go under either the ERISA rubric or you can go under the state law rubric, because under ERISA... the fact is, misrepresenting a material fact, who should bear the burden of that in this case?
How many employees took advantage of this early retirement?
Two. In fact, initially we sued on behalf of the class and discovered that there were only these two at the plant who took the early retirement. And their accuracy of their recollection is borne out by the fact that after they started receiving checks, they called up Jeff Satterley, who then tried to go up through the ranks and get it corrected to what he had represented to them. Even Ms. Cabot indicated that it would take more for her to retire. She was one of the people who denied the claims. She admitted it would take more for her to retire than just getting what she would get if she retired today. Because she liked her job, and there was no intention, there was no expectation that she would lose it. We think that the interpretation that the defendants make, that the misrepresentation must show under ERISA an intent to deceive, we think that that is a wrong standard, because what that does is that picks up, that essentially says we're going to apply common law fraud as the basis for ERISA claims rather than traditional equitable principles. Traditional equitable principles would go by the Illinois standard, which is only that there be intention to make the statement and that the statement might be negligently misstated. That would be sufficient.
Counsel, as you know, you're hardly the first case where somebody says, I'm entitled to the pension I was promised orally rather than the pension as it's actually written down in the plan, and none of these cases has succeeded.
Well, one has.
How do you reconcile your position with the established law of the circuit?
We can reconcile that with, and that is under the Bowerman special circumstance test. Bowerman is Bowerman is a completely oral misrepresentation, and her special circumstances won because she did make the decision to take to terminate her job in reliance on what she was represented. Now, Brosted is different because no one could say that, or the court took the position that...
Your answer suggests that you may be confusing welfare benefit plans with pension plans.
The difference, Your Honor...
My statement is accurate, that the argument you've made before has been tried several times with respect to pensions and always failed. Now, would you address the cases of this circuit dealing with pension plans?
The ones dealing with pension plans say that where there is an attempt to claim to force the plan to pay out benefits that were promised, that the plan, which is fiscally and soundly funded, shouldn't bear that risk. The welfare cases state that where there is an unfunded plan, basically where you're suing the employer to pay a benefit, that is a different case, and that's what supports the ones that have taken the other tack, which is to say that a misrepresentation can succeed because what you're doing
You're dealing with a pension plan. This is a written pension plan.
No, Your Honor, we are dealing with... I understand the argument, but at base we are dealing with a one-time severance package that is put together. It is not a plan. It is a one-time package. Any more than if the CEO is promised a deal of $600 million to get lost, plus whatever his pension is, that doesn't make the whole package determinable solely under ERISA.
The years of service, though, were they... That was accurate under the severance plan, as I understand it. But the only dispute is under the pension plan.
No, actually, all three of them were calculated based on, I believe, the Quaker acquisition of Golden Grain rather than...
your dispute isn't with the severance.
We don't dispute the terms of each package, of each part of the package. What we are saying is
about the calculation of pension benefits. What is the originating date for a particular pension calculation?
For purposes of this severance plan, not for we understand that the pension plan provides in specific terms what it provides. But when the employer says we have a one-time special deal, never going to happen again, here's what we're offering today, then the employer cannot resort to the strict terms of the plan and say, well, we really only can offer what's in the strict plan. When you offer a special one-time severance, you're not bound, the employees shouldn't take the risk that what they're misrepresenting to people to induce them, to approach them, to solicit them. These people didn't do a thing except show up for the plant meeting, be solicited by the employer, be explained by the designated representative what the terms were, and misrepresent to them. They relied on the terms of the special package.
When they appealed they went back to Saturday and Saturday tried to get a change. When they appealed, who did that appeal go to?
That went to the group administering the plan. I forget exactly the
plan administrator.
The plan administrator, yes. That's what, in fact, Mr. Satterlee suggested that they do that. Anyway, if I could reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mr. Traylor.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. To address a couple of Mr. Krisloff's points right off the bat, the Bowerman case doesn't apply, not only because that was a welfare plan case and not a pension plan case, but the key factor in Bowerman, as the Court recognized in that case and subsequent cases, was that the official plan documents themselves were ambiguous and misleading. In this case, the District Court specifically found that the official retirement plan documents were not ambiguous or misleading concerning the calculation of credited service and plaintiff's start date under the plan, and that's at appendix pages 13 to 14 and 20 to 21. So the Bowerman exception is completely inapplicable here. As Judge Easterbrook noted, the fact pattern alleged here is a common one in this court and other courts. Employees claim that they were promised or led to believe that they would have
They were led to believe something else.
Well, that's a fair point, Judge Kaney. There's no question that Mr. Satterlee
made a mistake,
yeah. And the district court found, and I don't understand plaintiffs to be challenging that was a completely innocent mistake. Under the severance plan, the credited service was calculated from the original hire date with the Golden Grain Company. And Mr. Satterlee, perhaps understandably, thought that same calculation applied under the retirement plan. The retirement plan, however, as the district court held, clearly provided that the credited service for these plaintiffs started on July 1st of 1990. But there's no dispute that was a completely innocent mistake on Mr. Satterlee's part. And as Judge Easterbrook pointed out, the law of this circuit is quite clear, both for estoppel and fiduciary duty purposes, that you have to have a knowing or intentional misstatement of material fact that the employee relies upon in order to state a claim.
Are we talking about $100,000 for each of the parties here, roughly, in difference of what looked like they were going to be paid and what the plan actually called for?
I don't have any basis to dispute Mr. Krivslaw's representation. I will say, though, that the record, I don't think, contains exactly what the difference in calculations would have been.
And the appeal that they took went to the plan administrator?
It did. It went to the retirement plan administrator and was treated. And in fact, their appeal documents said we are entitled to more benefits under the terms of the retirement plan. There's no question that from the beginning they understood that, you know, this was a claim under the terms of the retirement plan. It was a special early retirement package in the sense that it was available only for a limited time and under particular circumstances. But it was clear from the outset that what they were being offered was the chance to retire under the terms of the retirement plan. For example, in their complaint, paragraphs 23 and 26 of the third amended complaint, they alleged that Mr. Mr. Satterley gave them a worksheet, quote, showing the benefits she would receive under the terms of the retirement plan. So there was no confusion at all on that score.
Who is the plan administrator? And I assume, of course, that there's obviously fiduciary duties that the plan administrator has.
Certainly. There's a committee called the Administration Committee. Its members are appointed by the PepsiCo Board of Directors, and it is charged with administering the plan, handling claims.
Does it have any flexibility to say, well, in these circumstances, we'll go ahead and pay it because it's going to be cheaper than litigating it?
Well, all that we know from the record is that the plan has the language that says that the committee may, you know, exercise its discretion in resolving claims. Whether that would reach as far as Your Honor just said, I can't answer. The key document that plaintiffs rely upon in this case is the March 14, 2003 letters that each of them was given. That's the only document that lays out in writing the terms of this special early retirement package. And as the district court found, and plaintiffs do not dispute here, and this is at A15 and A26 of the appendix, these letters clearly state that the pensions and supplements are paid from the retirement plan. And the letter is clear on its face. It says, we encourage you to review the descriptions of the various plans to see what benefits you're entitled to. When you get to the section of the letter that deals with the pension and the supplemental benefits, it says these are the benefits you will receive under the terms of the retirement plan. The district court found the terms of the retirement plan are clear. So in the absence of an intentional written misrepresentation, or at least a knowing written misrepresentation, there's no basis either for an estoppel claim or a fiduciary duty claim under ERISA in this case. Now, it makes no difference that the employer initiated the communication in this case rather than the other way around. In the Vallone versus CNA case, for example, the employer offered an early retirement package to try to cut staff, just as the plaintiffs allege happened here. In the Barthelet case, the employer allegedly induced the plaintiff to leave a prior job by promising him pension credit for his time spent in that job. In Lister versus Stark, an employee who had left the company some time ago was induced to return based on the same sort of promise. In none of these cases did the court suggest that it mattered whether the communication started with the employer or started with the employee. In all of these cases, the normal ERISA principles governing estoppel and fiduciary duty claims applied. It also makes no difference that the plaintiffs here sued their former employer rather than the retirement plan itself. This court's decisions make clear that claims of this kind, that is, claims saying I was promised more pension benefits and I ended up not getting them, these claims concern ERISA plans and are governed by ERISA regardless of who the employee decided to sue. Again, in Barthelet, the former employee sued his employer and not the plan. This court explained that the claim was still a claim arising under ERISA because it involved a pension plan. The Helfrich versus Carl Clinics case was similar. There, the court noted that the employee's decision to sue the employer and not the plan seemed to reflect some confusion about what was really involved in these kinds of cases. Likewise, in the Downs case, the employee who had been promised, he thought, extra pension credit, sued the employer and not the plan. So their choice of defendant doesn't make any difference in the analysis. This is a case governed by ERISA. State law claims are preempted, and they have not satisfied the ERISA requirements for a cause of action. If the court has no further questions, that would complete my presentation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Trela. Anything further, Mr. Krzyzlow?
The argument that it's a welfare benefit plan doesn't end the discussion because it's the reason why a welfare benefit plan goes on a different rubric that is at base, because it is against the employer. And if Mr. Trella's position that no matter what, you're under ERISA and you're governed by this court's ERISA standard for equitable estoppel, this court's standard is really one of common law fraud rather than equitable estoppel. If we're going to core traditional equitable standards, that's what should be used rather than changing them. In that frame of reference, if we're going after the employer for misrepresenting either the existence of a package or a plan.
Maybe I've misunderstood the submissions, but I didn't think you were arguing common law fraud. That requires intent to deceive.
Right. No, we weren't.
We all agreed that Satterlee was just mistaken.
Right. No, we weren't arguing common law fraud. But this court's standard that requires that the misstatement be intentional rather than that the misstatement be intentionally made are different. Common law, the intent to defraud is common law fraud. Under core principles of equitable estoppel, it depends upon the intention to make the statement that they cannot dispute, and that the statement was negligently or recklessly, in this case, a misrepresentation. That's where we diverge with the court standard. If this is just, and suing the employer, that would take us into the Biondi cases, where there are cases that say that where you're suing the employer for misrepresenting the existence of a plan which doesn't exist, that is not covered by, that is not bound by ERISA, and we can provide a whole bunch of cases to that effect. The fact is, Your Honor, there are at least two different roads that lead to Rome in this case to correct the injustice, which they admit was done, where the employer goes out and solicits on a special package and misstates what they're presenting to induce them to retire now rather than at the end of their normal time. As Ms. Cabot said, you have to offer something more, and the employees certainly were represented to believe that they had something more than just what they would get if they retired now normally. You can't misrepresent it intentionally, negligently. Innocent doesn't comprise the facts. When they found out that it was wrong, with that 11 people had been given the wrong information during these two women's appeal, rather than go back and correct the information for the other 9 people who had been misled. And I got to correct one thing. There were 7 people who took the early retirement package, but the only 2 who had been with the company since Golden Grain were these two women. So that
everybody else started after 1990.
Right. The fact is, we believe, Your Honor, that this court standard is wrong and should just be equitable estoppel, or that the employer's misrepresentation of the package should not be bound by and preempted entirely by ERISA. If the court has no further questions, I thank the court's time.
Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement.